Hello there, and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
All right, folks, welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. We're glad to be back with y'all again here today, and I'm here with Professor Barlow as usual. How you doing today?
Yeah, great. We have an exciting guest with us here today.
Oh, we are fired up today. I tell you, we're continuing our series about all things crypto, and boy, we're excited today. Our guest today is Alan Armstrong, and Alan is a church planter from Canada and founder of the Bible and Bitcoin.com. And I want to learn what a church planter is. That's a new term for me. But he earned a diploma in pastoral theology from Vanguard College in Edmonton, Alberta. And he planted Life Giver Church in 2016 with the North American Mission Board. And he's also an author. And Douglas and I both dove into his book, The Bible and Bitcoin. And we'll have a link for all of these books below. And I think Alan has another book coming out we want to ask about as well. But we are just so grateful to have Alan here on the show. Also known as Pastor Coin, I believe that's right, on X. Alan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. And I see you guys are rocking the wood paneling. Which you can't, maybe I can shift this,
but
I got some wood paneling back there too.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. But we're not in a mobile home, I should tell you.
I recently posted an image of my new desk work area and people loved the wood paneling. I don't know what it is.
It's got that retro look.
Yeah. I personally don't like it, but now that everybody else likes it, I might just keep it.
Awesome. Well, hey, we're glad to have you, Alan. And hey, why don't I just kick off with a quick question about, you know, it's kind of an odd combination for a lot of folks, theology and Bitcoin. And maybe just give us a quick intro into how you learned about Bitcoin. What kind of motivated you? Was it the trucker fiasco that you guys had up there? What kind of led you this direction?
I'll try to give you the short version. Basically, there was a lot of different factors that played into how I ended up being kind of the Bitcoin guy. But basically, the big ones were, during the COVID fiasco, our church got into some, hot water, if you will, and because we weren't following the mandates, and I saw the tyranny was growing and trust was broken in every institution. Literally, I think every public institution, trust is at an all-time low after that, 2020 and beyond. But basically, we were doing some Bible study and we were going into the book of Revelation, and it was talking about different financial things in there, about the merchants of the world. And, you know, as a church, we kind of studied this stuff and determined, well, it looks like our current financial system resembles more of the beast that we read about in Revelation than it does the lamb that we read about in Revelation. And so we said, well, the financial system is devilish, it's beastly in its characteristics, and but yet here we are as Christians. How can we live in a system like this that's so fundamentally immoral at its policy level? But we're forced to use this money, you know? So what do you do? And we struggled with it, and I struggled with it, and I didn't know what the answer was. And providentially, God put Bitcoin across my path. And at first it was just like, okay, I need more money. You know, pastors don't make a lot of money, despite what you might read on the internet. Those guys who have the mansions are...
Pastors made a lot of money.
Well, you see sometimes online people posting these guys with their mansions and their $1 million jet, you know, ministries and their jet planes. That's like the 1% of the 1%. Most pastors are broke. So, anyways, I'm like, I just looked at it as a sort of investment to try to make some money. And then as I studied and went deeper into Bitcoin, I saw that, oh my goodness, it was after reading the Bitcoin Standard by Saifedean Ammous that I realized, okay, this is more than just money. This goes to the heart of our time, our energy, our mandate as humans to be fruitful and multiply. And so it shifted from maybe I can make some money on this to, okay, this is becoming a moral imperative now, because Bitcoin is a viable solution to the big problem I was struggling with, which was how can I as a Christian live in this immoral financial system. Now with Bitcoin, I see I have an opt-out, and not just an opt-out, but a peaceful opt-out. I don't have to take up arms. There doesn't need to be a violent revolution. I can just simply use Bitcoin.
That's
so great. That's sort of the short version.
Yeah, that's great. I think that question of morality, which is central to our faith, and then what is moral in, you know, the fiat world. And that's a big, big part of your book that I really, really kind of enjoyed. You got a
question? Okay, so, I enjoyed reading your book, and you stress in here in a chapter going off the gold standard when the U.S. did it in 1970. And, you know, so it went to it went from a restricted fiat, the dollar, to a totally unrestricted fiat. And things really have gone downhill quickly since that turning point. But you're in Canada. Can you kind of tell us, you know, did the Canadian dollar follow a similar path? How did this play out up there? Has the Canadian dollar been on the gold standard and they went off at the same time? Could you explain how that reflects or plays into the Canadian dollar, the life of the Canadian dollar?
That's a good question that I honestly have to just say I haven't even looked into. I actually don't know if Canada was on the gold standard. I would have to assume it probably was on some kind of a gold standard before. But, you know, the U.S. dollar is really what matters the most. The central bank of the Americans, the Federal Reserve, is the mother central bank, and every other central bank kind of has to, you know, what's the word? Check its balances with it. So I can comment on the Canadian fiat that it has been worse than the American fiat. Its value is less than the American fiat, and which is why a lot of Canadians like to get paid in USD, because it's like a 20%, sometimes even 30%. I think we're close to 30 actually now percent. Automatic raise in your pay when you get paid in USD, although your purchasing power with the Canadian dollar is much lower. So that's kind of even out in the end. But just a quick answer to that is, Canada is in the same boat as the US. And I like to tell Americans, you guys are 10 years behind us. So if you want to see what it's going to look like in 10 years in America, just look at what's going on with the Canadian dollar. And it's not looking good for you guys in 10 years. Sorry to tell you.
No, it's not. Well, that's great. So one question I have, Alan, is recently you had a post on X, I think a day or so ago, and a comment was kind of like, you know, you're pushing Bitcoin and Christianity and the church. And the commenter was like, these are no more two opposite things, like, how can you do that? So that just leads to my question is, how has the church been open to Bitcoin? And if not, what are some things we can do to help Christians realize the terrible immorality of fiat? Because most people just, you know, they live their life, they spend their money and don't think about what is money. They don't ask that basic question. So I guess kind of a two-part question from me. How can we get them to realize that this is a moral form of exchange, this Bitcoin, and that it is something, this is indeed a moral issue, just as much as abortion and some of the other things that Christians love to get up on their high horse about, but they do it and spend fiat, right? How can we cross that, and how can we get that conversation going at every church?
Yeah, that's a good question, and one that I'm trying to answer myself. So in my church, my context, immediate context, the church has received Bitcoin well. Well, let me backtrack. In the beginning, let me just say this. I don't preach about Bitcoin. Like, if you were to come to my church, you probably wouldn't even hear the word Bitcoin. You might hear it occasionally, but like when I'm preaching, I'm not like preaching Bitcoin. You know, I'm just preaching the Bible. But of course, the congregation knows who I am. They know I'm into Bitcoin. They know I've wrote this book and things like that. And so most of the congregation are either Bitcoiners or just like, they're just whatever. They don't really care. You know, they're just people who know I'm into Bitcoin, but that's it. That's pretty much where it ends. Now, in the beginning, there were people who were not happy with this Bitcoin transition. I don't know if you can call it that, but they thought, that I was getting into a scam and that I was going to waste church finances on Bitcoin. And there was some controversy. So some people left the church, others stayed. And I remember at the time being confused because I was like, guys, I'm not even preaching Bitcoin. I'm just like buying Bitcoin as a person. And, you know, you guys know I am now. And so now you think it was just blown out of proportion for no good reason, actually. Now, here's the good news is that anyone who stayed and bought Bitcoin is much better off than those who left and didn't. Because and I knew that was going to happen. Right. But, you know, I just let them leave. You know, at the time I said, you know what, that's fine. Let them go. I didn't want them to, but what are you going to do? But in the end, you know, the decision was vindicated and I did buy Bitcoin with church finances, not as like a renegade. I mean, we decided as a church that we would do this. And guess what? The church is better off because of it. It was the proper right move to do. Because of our Bitcoin holdings, our church finances have never been better. And we have opportunity now to do things that we could not do had we not, saved in Bitcoin as a church. And so no regrets. We are a case study, I think. And we're a small church, you know. The largest we ever got was like 40 people. So right now we're like 20 people. Very, very small church. But I think we're a case study in how Bitcoin can really change the trajectory of your life and of your church. Doesn't matter how big you are. So I'm trying to get the church to understand this, but to answer your question, how has the church at large responded? Kind of apathetically. There's some large churches in my city who I offered to do like free seminars for. I offered to come in and talk to their board of directors, their finance team to try to help them understand. And they all just kind of shooed me away. And so, you know, I find most success with church folk and Bitcoin is just individuals online. You know, I feel like you're either seeking or you're not. And if you're not seeking, bringing Bitcoin to somebody in that context who isn't seeking, they just think it's a joke and they shoo you away, which is why I pretty much wrote the book, because I figured, well, I might as well just distribute this knowledge as far and vast as I can, and those who are seeking will pick it up and hopefully get some value from it. And so I've kind of stopped reaching out to churches because I feel like I'm just wasting my time. If you don't want to learn, I feel like Satoshi now. If you don't want to learn this, I don't have time to explain it to you, kind of thing.
Right. Well, you know, it's great in your book. You have a great question and answer section toward the end of the book. And I found that to be very informative, and it answered many of my questions. And well, let's talk about, you talk exclusively about Bitcoin in this book. You don't talk about gold backs or other cryptos, but there are a lot of, as I've done research for this podcast in the last week or so, I've learned there are just loads of other cryptocurrencies out there now. And there's some like Ethereum that are doing quite well. And we interviewed an individual about a week ago about an alternative cryptocurrency, Texas Coin. So there are other cryptocurrencies out there. What is your view on other cryptocurrencies right now?
I stick with Bitcoin. There are a lot of other cryptos, and historically, they've The way I look at other cryptos is like 90s music. You know, you have Michael Jackson and then you have everyone else. I guess Michael Jackson was more 80s, actually. But if you think of cryptocurrency as pop music, maybe you have Michael Jackson, who's going to have lasting power. He's the king of pop. And then you have everyone else who has a one hit wonder. And so if you want to stake your time and energy in a one-hit wonder, good luck. You know, it's going to pop and have that one-hit wonder, but then it's going down. And when do you know? You don't. And so I'm going to put my money on Michael Jackson for the long term. And I think that's how we win. So Bitcoin is the original. Bitcoin has the network effects. It's truly decentralized. There are no, there's no CEO, there's no board, there's nothing like that. It was a fair launch. Satoshi himself had to mine his own coins, right? I mean, he didn't even give himself any. So I think Bitcoin's the most fair, the most honest, the most just, the most transparent. And that's why I stick with Bitcoin only, and the rest are just noise for me. As are the one-hit wonders. They're just noise. Like, this is a great analogy. I just came up with this. You know, like, what would you rather listen to? Like, Michael Jackson or Britney Spears? For me, it's Michael Jackson.
Neither.
Well, you get the idea.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things, I'm a big fan of Bitcoin, and I kind of got into it probably about the same time you did. And I've been, you know, kind of doing the DCA thing for 4 or 5 years now. And, you know, on a personal level, it's changed my life, not only financially, but also in how I think about money. And one of the things for me is I get a little feel-good feeling, okay? I don't know how else to say it. When I take a little bit of fiat and I put it into Bitcoin, I feel like I'm getting rid of fiat, like I'm destroying a little bit of fiat that's a little bit that they can't turn into a war. They can't create a bomb with it. And so I get that little bit of a morality boost, right? Every time I buy a little Bitcoin, because I know that, okay, that fiat's forever gone, and I've created this pure energy or purchased this pure energy with that money. So if you would talk a little bit more about that, maybe again, let's touch on deflationary, like Bitcoin, we would say, I think we'd be okay to say is deflationary versus fiat that's inflationary. And what is that inflation? How does that work with fiat? And how is that immoral? And how is that something, again, the church, when they learn, should be up in arms about what is happening on that fiat side?
Yep, and that's really the crux of the matter, I think, is Bitcoin is a solution to a problem. And if you don't understand the problem, then the solution means nothing to you. And so I have these on my desk here. These are different paper notes. This is from Venezuela. This is from Lebanon. This is from the United States. And you look at these different notes and you ask yourself, what's the fundamental difference between these? On the surface, it's just the ink color, right? What really is different? What is similar with these is the fact that they all are decreed by a central authority. Nobody in Lebanon, in Venezuela, in America sat down and thought, maybe we should allow a small group of people to determine the value and price of our money. Right? Nobody thought this was a good idea. And if given the choice, nobody would choose this over, say, gold, for example, right? This is hoisted upon us. This is forced upon us. And the underlying theological problem with this is that it puts itself in the place of God and purports to do something only God can do. And the irony of this money, specifically the American one, I'm not sure what these say because these are in different languages. Maybe they say something similar. But this one here says, in God we trust. Now, isn't that ironic that a money which violates God's standard has printed on it, in God we trust? In Genesis chapter 1, we read about the creation account, and there's lots of patterns in that chapter. And the one pattern I want to focus on is the repetition of the phrase, and then God said, and then God said, let there be light, let there be land, let there be water, let there be fish, and so forth. That word, let there be, in Latin is fiat. So if you were to read the Bible in Latin, you would see the word fiat multiple times in Genesis chapter 1. And that word fiat is translated in English as let there be. So God is creating things with fiat, right? This is what I call divine fiat. This is where God can speak and decree good, valuable things into existence. There's nothing else God has to do in order to decree value, real value, not like this. God has the ability of fiat because he's God, and he's the only one who has the ability of fiat. And so he creates us in his image, and he says, here's all of the things I made with my fiat, and I'm decreeing it is good, right? That's another pattern in Genesis. God saw that it was good. So what God's doing is he's creating with fiat, and then he's making a value judgment. It's good. So his fiat creates value, okay? Now, he says, this all for you. I created all this value for you, the earth and everything in it. So now you go in my image and image me by taking this value and reordering it in a way that brings mutual benefit to all other human beings on the earth. So we don't really, in a literal sense, we don't really create things, right? We just take what God created and we reorient it, work with it, fashion it into other things that serve other purposes. We can't really create anything, right? So here's where this comes into the conversation, because now we have groups of men who stand in the place of God and say, let there be money. And they say it's good, but it's not. You cannot, human beings don't have the ability to create value by fiat. The only way human beings can create value is by sowing and reaping, right? Which is why the Bible talks about sowing and reaping so much. You cannot reap where you have not sown. And fiat money is an attempt to reap what has not been sown, to create value from fiat, to speak, let there be value, and then force it on the people. But of course, we know it's a lie, which is why inflation is robbing us of our purchasing power. Now, this is a dollar. If they print more dollars tomorrow, I still have this, but this is not getting me as much as it used to. So the deception is, nominally, I have the same amount of money, but in real terms, I don't. They've stolen value from me. So that's the reason why this is such a big deal, why Christians need to really understand how this works. Because when they do, you'll understand how theologically twisted the idea of this type of money really is. And it's no different from Lebanon or Venezuela. It's the same principle.
Right.
Yeah, so it's really what you're saying there, Alan, is a group of men, a small group of men, are playing God and trying to create value where there is absolutely no value, and then imposing that on the rest of us and making us participate in this ungodly system is what really that is.
Right. Exactly. And they do it with the threat of violence, right?
Yeah, they're going to kill you, right?
Well, speaking of that, as crypto matures, more people start to use it for everyday transactions. It gets bigger. The government's going to make their play. They're going to want to take over Bitcoin, or they're going to want to introduce their own coin. and bring everybody back into the fold. How do you think that's going to play out? How do you think because there's going to be a future conflict here, because they're not going to want to give up this money printing. How do you see it playing out?
Well, there's a lot of talk about CBDCs and things like that going on, and a lot of fear about CBDCs. And I understand it, and I'm with that group. You know, I'm not a fan of CBDCs. I think it's a bad idea. However, we kind of already have a CBDC, right? If you think about it, you know, I don't know the exact numbers. I think last time I checked, something like 90% or something of the U.S. dollar is already digital, right? Most of the money, American dollars, are digital already. A very small percentage are actually paper, and so all a CBDC is kind of like a software upgrade on what we already have. It would be very easy for the United States tomorrow to say, okay, come January 1st, 2026, these notes are void. So go into your bank and trade them in for our new digital token. And if you don't, then in 2026, it's illegal to transact in these papers. They could do that. That's not a hard thing for them to do, right? They could easily do that.
Do you expect that they will do that?
Maybe. I don't know if it'll not like in the near term. I don't think it'll, especially with Trump in office, I don't think that'll happen in the near, maybe in the short to mid, maybe in the midterm, like within 10 years or so. It's hard to say, but they could do that. Or they could simply stop producing these physical paper notes and just say, okay, this is it. Everything else is digital from here on out. Eventually, these just go out of circulation, become collector's items or whatever. So there's a lot of ways you can do this. But the point is that digital dollars are already the primary form of dollars. So a CBDC would just be a simple upgrade to that, saying, okay, now this is all you can use, or maybe they can program it to be a little more tyrannical, where they can more easily seize your money, or they can even make your money expire or something like that. I heard China's doing something like that. So to answer the question, I think the way this plays out is that the governments that embrace Bitcoin will win, and the ones that don't will lose. So it's going to get to a point where, and I think it's already there, where most of the governments of the world are realizing we can't beat them, so we have to join them. Bitcoin's too big now. If they wanted to take out Bitcoin, they could have done it in like 2011, maybe 2012, but it's too big now. They missed the opportunity to attack this network. It's too big, it's too strong, it's too distributed. And so now the smart governments will join that network in some way, or they won't, and they'll lose. Sort of like gold and silver, where the United States chose gold, China chose silver, and we know who won. So that's how I see it playing out. I don't think there will be much of a sort of there'll be friction for sure in the short to near term, but I think in the long term, Bitcoin will win just because of its characteristics, and the dollar will probably live beside it in some way, but it'll be relegated to sort of a second tier medium of exchange, where Bitcoin will be the underlying bedrock of global finances. That makes sense.
That's great. And hey, we're kind of running up on time, Alan, but man, what some great insight you've given us, comparing this with theology and that fiat decree. What a great concept. I really appreciate you bringing that to us. I'm not a theologian, but, you know, to me, God is energy, and Bitcoin is energy, and it's proof of work, and it's real, right? And what a great system that God's given us, right, to use. And we're very grateful that you're helping us understand that and come to terms with that and seeing, you know, the difference between human fiat and the only true fiat. And we're so grateful for that. Hey, do you have another book that you're working on or coming out with?
Yes. So I have the Bible and Bitcoin. I also wrote this one, which is out now, called Render to God. It's about taxes, what the Bible says about taxation. This is one that I also enjoyed writing. So if you're interested in what the Bible really says about taxes, then get this.
And render it's not, and that's available at all book dealers, Amazon, places like
that. You can get this on Amazon right now, Render to God. It's very important because Christians have a faulty view of taxation. So there's that. But the new one I'm working on, I have it here. This is a proof copy called Truth and Code. This one's not out yet. And this one is about how, kind of like what you just said there, how Bitcoin has codified the truths of God's word in history and in creation. And so the sound economic theory of like an Austrian school of economics, for example, is actually foundationally founded upon Christian theology. And I found this link between sound economic theory, Christian economic theory, and Bitcoin's code. And I discovered that Bitcoin somehow, whether it was on purpose or not, I think it was just unintentional, because all truth is God's truth. But Bitcoin has encoded these theologically rich economic theories into one monetary digital network. And so this book demonstrates and goes through history, through the economic theory in the Bible, in church history, in Austrian economic thought, traces it all the way to Bitcoin, which has taken like 2,000 years of sound economic theory and encoded it into a single system. So it's fascinating. So this is my next book.
Well, Alan, there's so much to talk about. We'll have to have you back on sometime.
All right. This is just great. And we're looking forward to that book as well. And really going down a rabbit hole right there with it. And hey, thanks for coming on, Alan Armstrong, folks. And keep it Florida. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine Podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025, Palm and Pine Podcast, all rights reserved. Please subscribe and share. Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.